Chapter 17. Petra lay there still against him, sweat cooling, abruptly hollow with empty dread. Hell? What did one do or say? Ludo had said sweet things, flattering things. She was going to be sick. A touch startled her, Robin's fingers in her hair playing gently. She could interpret it as loving and satisfied, but she thought of his fingers in Coquette's fur, offering dutiful kindness to a burdensome devotee. She longed to thrust away from him, to run. But where was there to go? This room offered only a few feet of escape, and outside lay the deck, the sailors, and the deep, dark sea. If she stayed very still and silent, perhaps this would all go away. The boat tossed more wildly, and cold spray shocked her skin. "Struth!" Robin said, scrambling over her to close and fasten the shutters. Petra sat up, hastily rearranging her clothing, thanking God for rescue. But she was surrounded by the smell of him, of them both, of what they'd done. The last shutter thumped closed, dropping pitch darkness over them. Hell. She sensed him sit on the opposite bench. "Please don't say anything," she thought. "You honour me," he said. She swallowed and tried to make her voice practical. "You know I wasn't a virgin, so that was of no great moment, though pleasant, of course." Silence suffocated, and Petra struggled not to gasp for breath, wishing that by some magic she could be sucked somewhere far, far from here. "You could conceive. A common risk. I won't expect you to marry me." Practical was becoming brittle. "Don't you think I might wish to make a child of mine legitimate?" Petra wished she could see his expression. "Why, this can hardly be a new risk for you." "There are ways to lessen the risks, none of which we used." Petra rested her head back against hard wood and closed her eyes. "I don't want to talk about this." After another long silence, he said, "I need to check on our journey." He fumbled around for clothing. Perhaps he stepped on Coquette, for there was a yelp, then some soothing. Soothing another inconvenient female. The door opened, letting in some moonlight and a blast of damp air, then shut again. Petra sat where she was for a while, then lay down wearily on the pads still warm from their passion, still scented in that musky, mysterious way. She fought it, but began to weep. She wept until she hurt. She wept until she ached, and then until she slipped mercifully into sleep. Petra. Petra stirred out of sleep and squinted against light. Daylight? No, someone had brought a lantern, but the boat was tossing sharply with creaks and cracks and howling wind. Robin was looking down at her, made macabre by the wild candle flame. She flung her arm over her eyes, but not before seeing that he was fully dressed, even to the cravat. Was that armour? Hell. "I thought it time to wake you," he said. "We'll be off Folkestone soon." His exquisite care was painfully wrong for the man she'd come to know, but she tried to match his tone. "Can we land in this weather? It'll be calmer close to shore." "No other trouble?" "Signor Varzi bearing down on us like Blackbeard the pirate? No." He left, letting in a blast of air and spray that almost touched her. Struggling in the tossing ship, she scrambled for her cloak and pulled it close against the weather and against a deeper cold. She'd soon be alone in a strange land without a guide, for she would have to flee Robin Bonchurch at the very first moment. At least now he'd be pleased to see her go.
"Coquette,"
she said softly, needing comfort. But Robin must have taken the dog with him. She was truly alone. He returned. "It's time."
"We're there."
"The smuggler's boat is coming alongside." There was a bump, and Petra heard voices calling against the wind. She pulled the strings of her cloak tight at her throat, and one broke. She simply looked at it, helpless. "Where's the brooch?" he asked. She fumbled in her pocket, then was tossed by the ship's movement and would have fallen if he hadn't grasped her, his other hand braced on a wall. She dragged out the cameo and sat for safety. He fastened her cloak, apparently unaffected by their closeness, by contact, when she thought she might choke from his touch on her throat. He stepped away. She touched the brooch as she rose.
"I'll mend the strings. Return this to you."
"It's a trinket. It's yours." Petra hit him. It wasn't a slap. She swung her fist and caught him on the side of his jaw. He staggered and a curse escaped. She cursed more, cradling her hand.
"Good God, woman, did you break it?"
"No.
May you rot in the deepest depths of hell."
He froze in the action of rubbing his jaw.
"Don't dare to accuse me of rape."
"What? This is not about that."
"Isn't it?"
She knew it probably was, but not the way he seemed to think.
"It's because everything's a trinket to you. Because you can treat what happened as nothing. You..."
"Nothing?" He dragged her into his arms and kissed her. Petra fought him, because not to struggle was to die. He suddenly went still, then shoved her away from him.
"I apologize."
Petra closed her eyes.
"There you go again."
When she dared to look, he was in complete control.
"It must be because I'm English. I don't think I have a temperament in me, carefree or sober, that you could like."
It would be so easy to deny that, and fatal. Someone knocked on the door.
"Monsieur, you must come."
Petra thanked God again. Robin picked up Coquette and tucked her into his pocket.
"Getting crowded in there with two pistols to carry. Try not to wet the powder, no matter how nervous you get."
He opened the door and stood back for Petra, saying, "Keep hold of something as you go." Not surprising if that something wasn't him, but as Petra staggered into the rolling, wind-tossed night, she wished it was. Instead, the captain gave her his hand to help her to the side. They were close to shore, and a longboat lay alongside, knocking against the side now and then as barrels and boxes were passed down in the dark. Petra held on to a rope as Robin paid the captain, taking in the moon riding high among clouds, and the dark, turbulent sea laced by its silver light. She suddenly saw beauty amid the violence, and inhaled the sharp, intoxicating air. Robin came up beside her, and she asked,
"What's that white to our right? Mist?"
"No. That's the chalk cliffs. The end of them. The cliffs on the other side of the town are darker. Ready? I'll go first so I can help you into the boat." He climbed over the side of the boat and disappeared. Petra leaned over to watch him climb down a rope ladder and thought she'd finally come across something she couldn't do. She'd evaded Ludo, endured Lady Sodworth, joined her fate to a rake, fought off evil women and Vartz's henchmen, but she couldn't climb down that rope. She was given no choice. The captain hoisted her over and dangled her until she grabbed the sides of the ladder. Someone, probably Robin, guided her feet onto rungs. The prickly wet rope stung her palms, but his hands on her ankles stung more. If she fell into the sea and died, perhaps it would be a blessed escape. She was about to give up when he grasped her around the waist and swung her onto a narrow, hard bench. He sat beside her, bracing her in place, just as the boat bucked waves toward shore under the power of urgent oars. He held her close of necessity, but as soon as the boat jarred and scrunched up onto land, he let her go. He leapt out into shallow water, then turned. Again she had no choice but to let him carry her onto dry land. No slipping this time, and no teasing either. Just aching memories and tears that sea air might explain. The 8 smugglers were working with swift practice to unload their cargo. Everything went into sacks, and the boat was hauled up to join a row of them. Then all the men but one moved with remarkable swiftness up the beach toward the town above, disappearing into the dark. Out on the water, there was no sign of the Coulee. Petra saw some cottages nearby, but no sign of life. If anyone was awake, they'd know not to interfere with smuggling matters.
"Who be you, then?"
the remaining man asked, in an accent so rough, Petra had to guess the meaning. "Robin Bonchurch, sir, and glad of your assistance, and this is my sister, Maria." He held out some money which clinked into the smuggler's pocket. "Any chance of a vehicle?" Robin asked.
"Not this time of night, sir, not without questions asked."
After a contemplative moment, he said, "You best come up to my place till morning, sir. Doesn't do to have strangers turn up in the night." He set off, sure-footed, in only moonlight. Robin extended a hand, and again Petra felt she had no choice but to take it. A broken ankle would be one disaster too many.
"Can we trust him?" she murmured in French.
"Thus far," he replied. He didn't say, "Don't worry," but she heard it. The shifting pebbles became a kind of ramp that became a rough street between narrow houses. Rushing water suggested a stream had cut this valley.
"You live nearby, sir?" Robin asked.
The man twitched his head.
"Just up the town a bit. Best not talk."
Soon after, he stopped at a door that looked to be in an ordinary house, but something shrieked above. Petra flinched, but when she looked up, she saw a swinging sign.
"It's an inn or tavern," Robin said quietly. "Should be all right."
"Gula," Petra reminded him, shivering. They were ushered into a gloomy space with a sour smell. The smuggler opened a lantern to shed more light, showing 5 rough tables surrounded by chairs and benches and some huge casks against the wall. A tavern, as Robin had said, serving not wine but beer. She knew the English drank a lot of beer. Would she be expected to?
"Want something to drink?" the man asked. "Or some baccy?"
He took a long clay pipe from a rack over the fireplace.
"No, thank you," Robin said. "In fact, we'd like to leave the town as soon as possible. With a few directions from you, or better, a lantern, we could walk."
The man crushed aromatic tobacco into the pipe bowl with a thumb.
"You can if you want, sir, but it threatens rain tonight, and come first light, my brother Dan'll be driving into Ashford to pick up an order of rope and deliver a few things, if you know what I mean."
Robin turned to Petra. "Which do you prefer? It'll be hard going in the dark." Petra felt hopelessly undecided. Why had she imagined that being in England would make things simpler? Her instinct told her the smuggler was in his way an honest man, however, so she said,
It will be wiser to stay, I think.
The man nodded. I sleep in the kitchen, but there's a bedroom upstairs if you want it. I'll wake you come morning.
He put down the pipe and went to a door.
Name's Josh Fletcher, by the way.
He went through the door, leaving them alone.
Petra stared at that pipe as if it were a dark mystery.
Why did he fill it and then leave it?
Some do as a nervous habit. Remember, he's probably wondering if we're a danger to him.
That's what I thought about Mayor Goulart, and see how that turned out.
Petra knew, however, that she was more concerned about the bedroom upstairs than danger.
We can leave if you wish, he said patiently. I suppose we can't lose the road.
Silence fell around and between them, threatening to suffocate her again.
Let's go upstairs, he said.
There seemed no argument to make, but Petra was sick at the thought. She felt as sexual as a marble statue. But he might think he had a right to her now. She'd have to fight. She couldn't imagine the outcome. He'd picked up the lantern and was waiting to light her way up the wooden steps that were almost steep enough to be a ladder. She climbed it with her skirts bunched up, aware of her legs being visible, although they were no secret to him now. He followed, bringing the light to illuminate a large space under the bare sloping roof and one enormous low bed.
Probably sleep six in a pinch, Robin said, putting the lantern on the floor and taking Coquette out.
Lie down and get some sleep.
Petra studied him and realized he meant it.
Of course. He wouldn't want to repeat a hellish experience.
She pushed that word out of her mind. If she could, she'd forget the whole thing herself. Remembering Mayor Goulart's, she pulled back the patchwork quilt, but though the sheet wasn't fresh, it wasn't unbearable. She'd not be taking off any clothes, after all. It really was large enough to sleep six, and she could prove to him that his rutting had meant little to her.
"We can take a side each," she said. "I slept a little on the ship, but I doubt you did."
Avoiding eye contact, she took off her shoes and lay down close to one edge, pulling the quilt over herself. The mattress was lumpy and probably supported by ropes, which needed tightening. It sagged toward the middle, pulling at her, but she could cling to the edge. She heard Robin taking off some things, his boots, she supposed, his sword, perhaps his coat, with a pistol in each pocket. Coquette was still exploring the room, her nails clicking on wood like rat's feet. What would happen if she met a rat? The dog was Robin Bonchurch's problem, not hers. He blew out the candle, and it became dark except for clouded moonlight coming through the one unglazed window in the end wall. She felt the bed shift as he lay down on the far side. Probably 5 feet separated them, but her every sense knew he was there. Say nothing, say nothing, say nothing, she told herself. But sleep wouldn't come, and the question wouldn't go away.
Why hell?
She asked softly. Perhaps he was asleep and wouldn't hear. She thought that was the case, but then he said, I apologize. That was unforgivable, but I could have planted a child in you.
And every other time you've been with a woman, I assume?
As I said, there are ways to avoid problems. Do you really want to talk about this?
Yes, she said fiercely to the dark ceiling. Why do you not use these ways?
The silence lasted so long that she might imagine he'd left if she didn't know he was there, just out of reach.
I lost control, he said at last. Isn't that the point?
Only by intent. When I said hell,
It was also a lapse of control. Unpardonable, but I do ask your pardon. Instant forgiveness rose to her lips, but she said, If you felt that way, it's better I know.
Petra. He sighed it. It's not your fault. It's nothing to do with you.
No, that's nonsense. He stirred, and when he spoke again, she knew he turned to her. You are a very beautiful, very desirable woman. But I chose to be your protector, almost your guardian. What I did, it was not appropriate.
Appropriate? She echoed, unable to hold back a touch of wry humour.
No one would think it appropriate, but I did as much as you.
He didn't reply.
I don't expect you to marry me, I mean that.
I don't expect me to abandon you if you're with child.
It will be my choice.
We'll see. She rolled to face him to look into half-seen eyes.
I haven't come so far and striven so hard to be commanded and imprisoned here.
Marriage isn't usually considered a prison.
It was for my mother.
I am hardly a man like your father, the Italian one.
I don't know what sort of man you are. I felt sure at least that you were a libertine, but here you are preaching a sermon at me.
I have my code.
As do I.
She turned over again.
Good night.
Petra, please allow me to be your protector until you're safe. I will ask no more than that.
She couldn't reply because she would make no false promise. She thought that was the end of it, even though she couldn't imagine sleeping. But then he said, Will you lie with me?
She couldn't believe it. Of course not.
I mean, together. This bed dips so much that gravity will pull us together anyway, if we sleep. But I'd like to hold you, in the hope it might comfort us both, but also to show you can trust me.
Said the lion, opening its jaws, she muttered.
But the pull of gravity and him made her turn and slide down into the dip, where he met her and took her into his arms. A scrabbling brought an eager third party.
Down, Robin said.
A whine. I have never allowed a dog in my bed, you little pest, and will not start now. Get down. Petra thought reason couldn't work, but perhaps it was tone. She heard a rustling of the quilt, then claws on the wooden floor.
She's probably sleeping in my coat, damn her, he said, but without heat.
She loves you, Petra thought, but managed to keep that to herself. But oh, she shouldn't be here in his arms. He might be able to control himself, but she wasn't sure she could.
Wasn't this where we were on the ship? She asked, inhaling his smell, absorbing his warmth.
Trust me. Petra sent up a prayer that she could trust herself. Again she tried to sleep. Again she failed.
Are you awake? She asked softly.
Yes.
If not for me, where would you be going now?
To London, he said. You see, you've only taken me a little out of my way.
That dirty place everyone escapes in summer.
It's also the hub of all roads. I have to go through it to get to Huntingdon. But I have a few small matters to take care of there. If you think Riddlesome is there or at Richmond Lodge, it will be easy to check.
From what you said, I doubt it.
His hand moved on her shoulder. She knew it was his instinct to stroke, to comfort. He instantly stopped. His careful control could break her heart.
I know you're even less likely to trust me with your father's name now, he said, but there are some very bad men among the peerage.
I know, in Italy too.
If he's vile or doesn't acknowledge you, what will you do?
Go to Teresa Ema. To Mistress Cornalis. Perhaps I can be of some use to her.
I shudder to think. Please, Petra, allow me to find you a safe place. My mother would take you under her wing, for your religion, if for no other reason.
Petra might have truly shuddered. Live on the fringes of Robin's life as he went on his way, enjoying loose ladies, and eventually marrying a tight one. Tight? That didn't seem quite the right word.
Petra.
We'll see, she said, deliberately echoing him.
I see, he replied wryly.
Robin, why should your mother welcome a young woman of scandalous background who's dragged her son into mishap and danger? I'm Cock Robin Sparrow, aren't I?
I'll keep bows and arrows out of reach. Go to sleep. All will be well. I'll make sure of it.
He fell asleep, but Petra lay a little longer, pressed close to him, before easing apart and back to her safer edge. She tried to stay awake, to be on guard, but sleep sucked her down. Robin wasn't asleep, so he knew when she moved apart. Was he imagining reluctance? At least she hadn't wanted lovemaking. He hadn't thought it likely, but the prospect had worried him. He knew no gracious way to handle a situation like this. He wanted to blow his brains out over that one word. Coquette tried her luck again, leaping up and wriggling under his hand. He let her stay. He needed some loving comfort. But then he remembered stroking Petra after that disaster. The elegant pleasuring of women had been part of his education, and it included attention to their feelings and their dignity. A gentleman should be a gentleman in every part of life, had been his father's dictum. Whore, duchess, or merry widow, there must be courtesy and mutual delights, and a disciplined avoidance of disasters. Disaster was too tame a word for his current predicament. He was tempted to avoid Thorn for fear of his opinion, but he needed to get Petra into protection as soon as possible. He could leave her at Eyethorn, however, on the excuse of racing up to London to make sure Poeck and Fontaine were safe, and everyone else at his London house, he supposed. Yes, he'd do that. And now he'd stay awake to be sure Josh Fletcher didn't creep up here with a bread knife. Or Vartzi appear, torture implements in hand.
Mr. Bonchurch!
It took Robin a moment to realize that was him, and that, plague take it, he'd fallen asleep after all. But it was morning, and they'd survived, and Josh Fletcher was calling him from downstairs.
Yes!
Robin called back, sitting up, easing an ache in his back.
You need to be down, sir, if you want a bite before setting off.
Thank you. Robin turned, but Petra was already out of bed, her back to him. She too stretched, arching with her hands in her back. Robin's mouth dried at the sinuous beauty of her in morning light. Her simple gown did nothing to hide the lines of her body, and above the neckline he could see the fine bones of her neck and the beginning of the long indent of her spine. She bent to pick up her shoes, and his mouth watered at her natural grace. He dragged his eyes and mind away, turned and pulled on his boots, forcing his mind to practical matters, ways to persuade her to let him help her. He wanted her, though, in more ways than the physical. He'd fight armies to possess her. But a part of him wanted to escape the chaos she brought, to get back to carefree days. It had been a terrible year. The shock of his father's death had crushed the whole family, his mother, his two brothers and two sisters, aunts and uncles, servants, tenants. A vital, respected, beloved man gone in a week from a neglected gash from a bull he'd been admiring at the local fair. He realized he was just sitting there and rose to stamp his boots into place. He'd pulled everything together again. The world was more or less turning in the right direction. He'd played the Earl at court and in Parliament, and then plunged into summer amusements. And now this. Coquette was quivering at the edge of the ladder, impatient to go outside and piss. That was a simple matter, easily solved. He put on his sword and heavy coat and found Petra ready too. Why had he bought her a dark red cloak? Because he'd known how magnificently it would suit her. He scooped up the dog and went down, turning at the bottom to offer assistance. She was already following without help. Wise woman. That's the way it should be.